Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Phase Zero. We are back with another bonus episode on the road to Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm your host today, Jenna Anderson, and I'm joined by Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, everybody?
Jamie Jurak.
Good morning.
And Charlie Ridgely.
Hi, everyone. I'm starting to feel like the Fox X-Men universe of this of Phase Zero. It's like, oh, like it came up once and that was cool and nice, fun. And then it came up again. It's like, hey, how many of these are there? And now they keep showing up and we didn't know they were here. And now there's just a lot.
I will say for the listeners, BD was very sad to be missing this episode. When we did the math and figured out that he would be on a plane while we were recording, he was legitimately sad. So, but we are very happy that Charlie is here, especially considering the movie we will be talking about today. We are going to be covering X-Men Apocalypse from 2016. Next week, we will be covering Logan. So completely opposite end of the spectrum in a lot of different ways. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, we're going to break down X-Men Apocalypse. And in order to do that, first and foremost, we need a recap from Jamie.
Oh, here we go. I got to tell you, for this one, it's not going to be in like chronological order. I'm just going to blurt out, I think, what my heart it wants. We'll see what happens. Aaron, get my clock started.
Yes.
All right. It's X-Men Apocalypse time. Who's here? It's Apocalypse. And what does he want? Four horsemen. And he's going to find them. And I'm just going to tell you right now who they are. It's Psylocke. It's Storm. It's Angel. And then, it's Magneto. But here's the thing, you guys. I'm just going to start off with our guy Magneto. He's been in hiding. He's been living a nice life. He's got a wife. He's got a daughter. And then, but all of a sudden, he's working in the factory and he saves the guy with his powers. And they're like, oh, that's Magneto. We don't care that he saved our friend. We're gonna witch hunt him. And they do. And then they kill his wife and daughter. This poor man, he cannot catch a break. So he's like, ooh, and he gets apocalyzed. So those are people are doing. Meanwhile, Charles opened his school finally, and Hank's working there, and they've got all these new students, and it's the 80s. Look, Jean Grey is here. And then, oh, Scott Summers has shown up. We saw him at school. His eyes started to hurt. Boom. Eye powers. You know the drill. You know the boy. He's in school now. And they're like, yeah, look, oh, everyone's afraid of me. Everyone's not afraid of you. They're afraid of me. I'm Jean Grey. And then there's an earthquake. And everyone's like, did Jean Grey do that? Who knows? And let's see. So everyone's like, oh, my God, Apocalypse is here. And he's got four horsemen. What's going to happen? And then you know who's trying to stop him? Marva Jones is back. Who knew? And my gosh, she not aged a day. So we're all like, ooh, boy, let's stop Apocalypse. And Quicksilver sees Magneto on TV doing bad business, and he's like, I'm still in this basement, and I also haven't changed a day. I'm going to go check out that school for gifted kids. So he goes to the school just when, oh, you know who's up there? Alex is over here. He's back. He's visiting his brother. But then, oh, no, there's a giant attack and explosion, and Quicksilver saves everybody as a song plays. You remember that. There's a dog there, too. And everyone's like, oh, no, this is so sad. And then, who is it? And Stryker's back. And he's like, I'm going to kidnap these people. Because guess what? Raven was also there. Mystique was there. Because she had rescued, oh, who is it? A boy, Kurt. Nightcrawler. He brought them to the school. So he's like, give me Mystique. Give me the other powerful ones. Charles is there and some other guys. Oh, that Quicksilver guy. Let's take them. And then at that same time, some of our cool kid friends, we got, you know, we got, what are their names? Jean and Scott and Nightcrawler. They were at the mall hanging out. So on the way back, they missed the business. And Jean's like, we're going to do power stuff. And we're going to get on this plane. And we're going to rescue everybody. And so it's a rescue mission right in that old Stryker business. And everyone's like doing stuff and they're rescuing people. And who else is there? We're at the building, with the Stryker building? Oh, it's Wolverine. Oh, he's a maniac. He's a monster. But, oh, Jean's there and she's going to calm him down because, oh, no matter what timeline it is, they're going to have a connection. And he's like, okay, mom, I'm going off to do my Wolverine things. And I'll see you in a few decades or in a decade. It's really unclear. And so she's like, okay, bye, we're going to get out of here. And then, okay, back to the Apocalypse and his four horsemen. They're going to destroy the world or make the world Apocalypse's world something bad. And all this stuff happens and there's a big fight. Everybody's fighting. Boom, boom, boom. Magneto, he's going to fight. But then they get through to him. His head is clear. He makes a Metal X. He's good again. Yay. And everyone fights. And then Apocalypse is defeated. Oh, by the way, Quicksilver, he's telling everybody that he's Magneto's son, but he's not ready to share that information yet with good old dad. So that's where it all goes down. At some point, Alex died. Some of the people are good. Some of them aren't anymore. And I think that's the movie, you guys. I did watch it this week.
that was a good time. 3:43. I feel like that was one of the shortest ones you've done yet.
Did I miss anything?
The post credits.
Yes
scene?
And no. You missed a lot, but also nothing at all. Everything you missed doesn't matter.
I honestly none of it matters. Forgot
Jubilee was there.
Yeah. Oh well. Yeah. And you know what? I treated her just as well as the movie treated her by not mentioning her in my recap.
All right. Well, snaps for Jamie. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Anything that you missed, we will obviously cover. And as you said, the movie might have missed it too. So yeah. While Jamie catches her breath, Charlie, what are your initial thoughts? All of these years later, revisiting X-Men.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since theater, and this is one of the first movies I helped cover. I was part-time at the site in summer 2016 when this came out. So this is like one of my first movies I helped like work with the site. And I have not watched it since then. And it's not awesome. But it's also not, remember when I was like, oh man, I was hoping when I rewatched X-Men Origins, it would be like kind of fun, but bad. And then it wasn't, it was just really bad. This was more what I was hoping for. Like there's things in here I like. There's things in here worth something. Most of it's not great, and it should have been way better. But, you know, this is, I think, what this era of X-Men really kind of became. You know, outside of the Deadpool and Logan situation, most of it just kind of was, let's do this big, iconic X-Men thing because Disney's lurking behind the door, just knocking to take our mutants away. So let's just Simon Kinberg the crap out of all of this and throw everything at a wall, and hardly anything's going to stick, but we're going to do it anyway. So, you know, for a 2016 X-Men movie, I'm not mad I rewatched it, but 2.5 hours is a lot of time for what I got.
I agree with that. You feel the runtime. Aaron, what did you think?
I think that this is probably like, well, you know what? I was going to say something silly about like, that's the first time I've really enjoyed the Jamie recap way more than the movie, but that's a lie. So, this is the first one of these that really kind of leaves you cold. Like I really have no real, you have to do a lot for Oscar Isaac to leave you feeling nothing. Nothing. Ariel, I mentioned to her that Oscar Isaac is Apocalypse after like watching, and she was like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's a problem. It's an issue. This also is the movie that's the most emblematic of the thing that I feel like killed a lot of the like new timeline, you know, X-Men stuff. And that is just they cannot help themselves in devaluing the newer cast to serve the stuff from before. Because the second that you put the Stryker stuff in here, the second you get Jean Grey and Scott, and they have like the audience playing off of expectations from the previous trilogy, it bogs it down and people start wondering about timelines and how this could be true and how the heck did they not remember Logan if they met him before of it all, even though I'm pretty sure it does kind of explain it. But
and even
it
just, though his time there does not match up with anything that happened in the X-Men.
Not at all. Not even kind of. It's like as much as people make fun of the current crop of superhero movies for doing look at that, you know that thing, this is doing that hardcore. It is backflipping dog dunking a basketball doing. Remember stuff from when you were 10 years younger than you are right now? Like literally. So I don't know. I just, that's a movie. That's a movie that happened, you know? I think Charlie's really, really apt too. And he's like, they really felt Disney's footsteps coming. It is Augusta on Sunday and Tiger is charging and you are in danger and you need to figure out what the heck you're going to do. So yeah, goodness gracious. Apocalypse, a movie.
Jamie?
My thing about Apocalypse is that, like, I wish it didn't exist because I think that if we had ended things at Days of Future Past, it would have been perfect, and I really wish that that's just what had happened, but it's not. I have never hated this movie. I've seen it a few times, but this has been my first time since my first log. I haven't watched it since joining Letterboxd, so that tells you something. But I it has so many problems. It does so has so many mistakes, but there are movies in this franchise that I hate, and this isn't one of them. It's just like I watch it. I'm along for the ride. It has moments that I cry like three times watching this movie because I'm a sucker. The timeline stuff doesn't bother me. The timeline stuff doesn't bother me because it's explained in the end of the last movie. You know, Wolverine experience with Stryker is different than it was before because of what happened in Days of Future Past. So that's fine. I like the casting of the young people, and I just you know, yeah, Apocalypse, it's a bummer that Apocalypse just kind of sucks in this movie. And I think that the scene with Magneto and his family, all that stuff is so well done. It's probably the best thing about this movie, but also I don't want to watch this man suffer anymore. Like, we've seen enough. He has been beat down. People, his family has been murdered. I just think this was like a little step too far. This is like, we've taken it too far for Magneto. Let the man rest.
So, and yeah, at this point, it's like, how do you, if you're trying to set Magneto up, again, he is an empathetic villain, like someone you're supposed to connect to, but also be the villain. At this point, how do you not just like, oh no, I'm on Magneto's team forever. Like, yeah. Full on, he's right, and I'm behind him more than Charles in any situation, you know, because you after all the suffering, you can't. It's like, oh, yeah. Poor guy.
People always do, though, Charlie, in real life. People always do. Also, can I just say, funny timing to have this movie after that episode of X-Men 97. Rough week for Magneto fans. Rough 7 days.
For the Magneto fans who listen to this show, at least like a lot of Magneto fans aren't, you know, having to rewatch this for our show. And thank you to the people who did. I agree with everyone on this panel. I feel like there are so many other superhero movies that I can pick apart and dislike and kind of almost just revel in the fact that I dislike it. This movie, I was just so nonplussed, like a lot of the time. I think that there are decisions that I dislike. There are decisions that I don't agree with. I think that the movie misfires more than it does succeed, but I still like the cast enough. And it just becomes this thing where it's just like Charlie said, it's 2.5 hours. You really feel the 2.5 hours and you kind of feel disappointed of like, I'm watching all of these great people. I'm watching this continuation of First Class, which is a movie that I thoroughly love. And I'm watching them just kind of like not get to really flourish and like spread their wings. And so it's just like disappointment more than anything. And like, that's not even getting into the Oscar Isaac. Cause I feel like I remember when he was cast, I remember having optimism. I remember this because this movie came out before I started working at the website. And I vividly remember watching Jim Jail Cell Viscardi and BD be on like an Instagram live when the first look at Apocalypse drops and just kind of explaining it and like rationalizing it. And I like going from that point to where we're at now, it's like I'm just still so disappointed at how they wasted Oscar Isaac.
It's like less than a year after Poe, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was like, we had to keep checking, like Chris and I, when we were watching it, of like, when was this? It's like, yes, he had already had a Star Wars under his belt and like deserved to be in something. But like, this just felt like such a weird misuse of him. But yeah, we'll get into that definitely when we break down the movie in more detail. We're going to take a quick 1 minute break. And when we come back, we're going to do exactly that. So stay tuned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back to Phase Zero, where we're breaking down X-Men Apocalypse. We are now in the kind of Easter egg breakdown portion of the show. I have my notes. I know everyone else probably has a lot, so chime in as needed. My first note is, we talked last week about the opening scene of Deadpool and just how cool it is and how much it sets the tone for the movie right out of the gate. I feel like this opening scene is the complete antithesis of that. I feel like you don't learn anything, you don't feel any tension. Unless you are a comic reader who knows what Apocalypse's deal is, it feels like it's just nothing. Like, it kind of sucks the air out of the room before the movie even starts. Does anyone else agree with me?
It did set up the movie we were about to watch, because it was absolutely nothing and nonsense. So in a way it did that, but you're correct. It tries to give you that Apocalypse story, but just the whole time you're like, all right. Like, it's a whole real big shrug of a scene.
Jamie, Aaron, do you have do you have feelings about it?
It's crazy because I watched this like 4 days ago and I'm like, what's the scene again? And like, I'm not even like a hater of this movie. I'm like very fine with this movie. And but it is like not memorable. It really isn't. Like, I'm racking my brain. And
they're at the pyramids and it's when they transfer Apocalypse's body into Oscar Isaac. And it's OG kind of flashback.
Yeah, I didn't put that in my recap. Yeah, it's like, whatever. It's, you know, I guess like Charlie said, it lets you know what's coming.
In the way it intends to.
No.
it sets the tone for basically his plot being Captain Ginyu. That's great. That's it. I really am down. Like, I apologize to the listenership, because these are the movies that when you point to, why is Aaron like excited to do all of these? Like, shouldn't you really love the X-Men? These are the weird Civil War dog flashbacks I get when people bring up X-Men movie to me.
Yeah.
You know?
I will say, like, we'll probably get into this when we do our rankings, but like, I feel like I had a more pleasant time rewatching Last Stand than I did with this. Cause it's like, at least with Last Stand, you get like an intent. You get that they are trying something. And it feels like a lot of this movie isn't even really trying. So,
and Last Stand, you get the benefit of like the 2000s goofiness era.
Yeah.
Like, all of the dumb stuff that made up that era that we're really nostalgic for now. Yeah. Even when it's bad in a way that you can be like, oh, like that was fun and silly and, you know, it's enjoyable in that way.
I would rather watch this than Last Stand, but I will say, I think both of those are examples, are two movies that are greatly affected in retrospect by Days of Future Past, because as I said in our Last Stand episode, I like watching Last Stand more now because of the way that Days of Future Past retconned it, and they did the same thing with this. Like, Last Stand doesn't exist anymore, which is why certain things are able to happen in this movie, and that I appreciate. Like, Days of Future Past is really carrying all of the worst movies in a way of like, it's kind of fixed, but then they didn't keep, they messed it up further. The timeline of all this doesn't bother me. It's the timeline, the literal years that doesn't make sense. Like, how is this 10 years after the last movie when everyone looks the same?
Well, let's get into that, because I have that in my notes like multiple times. They say that two decades has happened since First Class. They say that a decade has happened since the flashback sequences of Days of Future Past. I feel like there is no actual stake to that whatsoever. It also doesn't help when they are not aging up any of the cast members from that time whatsoever. Like, I think that it just puts this whole thing in such a weird arrested development of like the characters that we do recognize from the previous movies are just, they're nothing. They've just been frozen in amber. Quicksilver is like the worst example of it when he's literally in the same exact place that he was 10 years before.
So you could maybe argue Eric, because he's been through too much to like look young. But like, Charles has hair. That's the only difference in any of these people.
The internet talks about this all the time, but when we talk about 10 years ago, when they all look the same, as opposed to 10 years from now, when they look like Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, is just comical. It's like, well, maybe like not quite 10 years, but the difference between this and First Class is longer than this and the first X-Men movie. And so it doesn't make sense. There was no need for them to do every decade. Let's get one into the 80s and then we'll do the 90s. It just doesn't, like, I get like aesthetic wise, that's fun, but it is nonsense. Do all mutants, like, is the whole thing in this, like, mutants just age slower?
But even to that point, Moira, who in this universe is a human, still looks identical. Like, the Charles literally has a line about, oh my gosh, she looks like she hasn't aged a day. So it's like, it was just this kind of laziness that they just didn't really care to like actually age up the actors with the times.
And like, but Moira's got that mom haircut. So, you know, just that.
It would have been really fun to like, even though you invested a lot in these people, it would have been very cool to like have a different decade movie with like different actors in these roles, and just like, I mean, again, they would never do that because continuity, and they want to lock people in for these things. I get it, but like that, like conceptually, that's a pretty fun way to do this. This just, it didn't even attempt anything. Like, just give someone a wrinkle, you know, push that hairline back just a little bit. No, nothing.
It's interesting because if you look at this, like, you're just using the different X-Men pieces as like parts of like notes to play and stuff. It makes a lot more sense, like as like brand management chess piece moving. You know what I mean? Because while the other two had to be period piece things where they're, you know, different eras. So, of course, we have to do. Like, what is it, the 80s and the 90s? Like, we have to do it again. It, even if the story doesn't call for it, those are what the other movies do, so we have to do it. That's why I really enjoyed Days of Future Past, because it was so confident. It doesn't feel like a lot of this is done in confidence. It's like they are banking on familiar trappings to secure that pop out of the audience, and you'll overlook some of the parts of this that just don't hold up and don't make a ton of sense. And I don't even care about things making sense. I don't really give a darn about stuff making sense in 80% of stuff we watch for this show. But it is kind of interesting.
It's when the movie takes itself so seriously that it wants to make sense. Like, if the movie doesn't care, and it's like you talk about the confidence in Days of Future Past, it's a different vibe, you know, like, but when the movie is very self-serious and very much like wants this all to be realistic and all this stuff, and then it doesn't hit, it's like, all right, I have a harder time taking it like seriously then, because you so desperately want to. And it's crazy like that this is made by, I don't want to spend a lot of time on him, but it's made by the same person who made Days of Future Past. And these movies feel not just in the tone of the film, but you mentioned the confidence, like that is a confident movie. In every shot, in every scene, like it is so intentional. And this is just not at all. It's completely the other direction.
And where it is confident is in like the weirdest little ways. Like right. I have a note in here about the opening credits, about the introduction, because there, ever since this movie came out, the whole joke of Jesus being a mutant has been a thing, because you see Jesus in kind of the opening credits going through all of history. You also see the Twin Towers, which is definitely an interesting choice to make.
Given the Twin Towers are mutants confirmed.
Jesus.
Like it's such
who's buying the Twin Towers though?
It's such a weird note to start this movie on, especially after that opening scene being such a nothing burger. I know we're not going to do Avengers Tower talk here. BD's not here.
I don't need to talk about it. It was a one-off joke. I just want to let that.
I know. But yeah, it's just like they're confident in a way that is like almost baffling. And like, it's frustrating even just writing notes for this movie, because normally I would be like, oh, this is an homage to this thing from the comics, and this is clearly an intentional thing that they had from the comics. But like, we've since heard stories about the set of this movie where they kind of were like, please don't have comics on set. We don't really want to talk about that. And so it's kind of like anything that they do have that is almost comic canon almost feels like accident. So it's just kind of that whole thing is frustrating in and of itself. Because even like my next note on here is the Blob is a wrestler that that Warren is fighting. It's like, cool, he's there. Nothing really to make of it, but he's just there. But yeah, Warren's stuff, as Jamie said, like since The Last Stand is completely retconned, his origin is completely different. We don't have the stuff with his dad and the age stuff that we have kind of in the present day of the movies. My thing is just like, for every one good line or one good scene, it feels like there are five that are bad or just like unremarkable. Does anyone else agree with me in that regard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's also when they make every good decision, it's like they actively spend the rest of the movie working against that good decision they made. A lot of that with the cast, you know, I know we're going to talk about the young cast and stuff, but like, I don't care about the, you know, they got big people to play Cyclops and Jean Grey. That's great. But like the where they really nailed the casting and nailed these characters are with the ones that they ultimately do nothing with. And just Warren is awesome. He looks so good in those first couple of scenes. And then they give him metal wings and apocalypse him. And then he's really lame and has face tattoos and then dies unceremoniously out of nowhere. And then, you know, Storm, Alexandra Shipp was really good as Storm. Like she embodied the character really well. Like I fully believed that character. I loved the hair. Great Storm. And then like you didn't really do, she did a couple Storm things and then sat around and was like, oh, am I bad? I don't know. And then like changed her mind at the end and now is an X-Man and stuff. Like, it's just the things that they knocked out of the park. Jubilee didn't do it. And such a good actress. And to give her Jubilee and then to just not do a single thing with Jubilee the whole movie.
Yep.
But then we spend all this time with Scott Summers and Jean Grey. And I mean, okay, personally, I don't care about the characters. And I know I'm not everyone feels that way. People who like the X-Men, I don't really care about Scott or Jean. But the characters we get in this movie are just vanilla. Not just, they're there. And you're not James Marsden, and not because James Marsden's perfect, but at least he was entertaining. This guy's just like, no offense, you're a weenie, and I don't.
I mean, that you just
we don't need
Scott Summers, but
that is Scott is yes, but to even, Scott Summers,
but it, to a degree that's not even like, because Marsden knew that, and he's like, I'm gonna make him funny, and like you're gonna laugh at my weeniness, and then like this movie doesn't ignite. It's too serious. Mm-hmm. And Jean Grey's just crying all the time, which, I mean, if I was Jean Grey, I'd cry all the time, too. But, like, you can do something about it, man. Like, it's at least try and fail and kill everyone in the process. Just,
well, that goes to my next note, which is like, these movies don't seem to know what to do with Jean other than to just speed run to Dark Phoenix as fast as they possibly can. Like, the fact that we're reintroducing her right out of the jump, and like, they knew how Last Stand was received. They knew, like, huh, when we tried to do the Dark Phoenix stuff before, it didn't really work. And yet immediately it's like the only bit of like character strife that we can give her is the Phoenix Force, ostensibly. Like, that, as a Jean fan, it's kind of frustrating because it's like, there's so much more to her character. There's so much more you could be doing, even just within the conflict of the movie. You didn't have to default to that. But yeah, it's just kind of disappointing.
We'll talk about it when we get to Dark Phoenix. But the thing about it is, like, it's Simon Kinberg just wanted the chance to right his wrong. That's why they kept, that's the only reason why they're like, let's do Dark Phoenix again, and then let's give it to the same guy again. Yeah. And that's they were trying to fix it, and they didn't, and we'll talk about that when that comes. And I think that also comes down to why I'm okay with Apocalypse, in a way of, like, I enjoy watching this movie because of how much I viscerally hate what comes next. So it's like, this movie's fine. It doesn't offend me. It's not very good. But I'm like, look at the X-Men. They're out and doing things. I don't want to punch the screen when I watch this movie.
One of the reasons that I have such a reticence about some of the commonly voiced concerns around the genre and stuff is that full-scale, fully operational Death Star MCU, this is how they treated making these stories, is run to that popular storyline from a book as quickly as possible. Like, if you're doing fan service for the sake of fan service, she's not even Marvel Girl in this.
Yeah.
That would have been huge pop. And it's freaking period stuff that you can make look cool on screen. Like, and that's the whole gimmick of these series of movies. It's just a weird decision. But you know, the only thing people realize, a whole generation that grew up on that cartoon, is she has to become the Phoenix, and that has to happen. So, and there's not like there's anything else, as X-Men 97 proved in like an episode, that you can use to, you know, boost up Jean Grey at all. Surely we'll just ignore all that whole decade of stuff that happened. So, her and Scott, they're in here because I know that guy, I know that lady, that's really what's going on. God bless. I feel bad for Chris in the comments, who's like, Scott Summers is always just catching strays in here, which is funny to me.
Even then, we were kind of like, we had a lot of thoughts on Scott when we were watching rewatching this yesterday. Because again, they don't necessarily even hit the mark. Like, they do to an extent, but they just take it so much further.
Scott Summers is the stray, okay?
Oh, like, no.
He got the X-Men caught him, unfortunately.
And sometimes it's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse. But yeah, so pivoting to another story arc, another character. I know Jamie mentioned this. The whole storyline with Eric and his wife and his kid, I like it in theory. I am moved by it to an extent, but it does just feel like we are just kicking this man while he's down. And it feels like we are just kind of finding more reasons to make him miserable. And then just the anticlimactic way that scene kind of resolves itself, I just felt nothing rewatching it this time. How did you guys feel?
I definitely feel something because I love Eric and I love Michael Fassbender's performance of Eric. But I also, like, as much as I'm like, this is a good scene in a movie, it's like I said before, I don't think it's necessary. But I wouldn't say it doesn't make me feel. But still.
I agree, sorry, Jenna, go ahead.
Jamie, do you feel comfortable sharing where you did cry? Because I am very curious.
Oh, I'd love to tell you what makes me cry. I cry when they're all telling Mystique how she changed their lives, all the young ones. I really love that moment. I just love Mystique, and I love the idea of, like, all these young mutants, like, that's their hero. And as much as, like, this is the one where I'm a sucker, it's the Jean and Wolverine moment. It's because of my X2 love. It's because X2 is my favorite Marvel movie. I'm full blown sucker, but that scene does, like, really, the first time I saw this movie, I didn't see that coming. So I was like, I really, it swelled my emotions a little bit. I know it's bait. I know that it doesn't make this movie better, but, you know, sucker's gonna sucker. So
I respect
it's,
that.
It's a little creepier with Sophie Turner, I won't lie.
Yeah, it is.
Than with Famke Janssen.
Yeah.
But it was a nice thing that I wish she was older for, because it could have been a cool. Jamie, I'm with you though. I really felt stuff with the Eric scene. Like, I do not think it really fits in the movie. And I think the execution of the arrow is so lame.
Yeah.
But I think it speaks to Fassbender's performance that I felt so much, as much as I did. He, thank God for Michael Fassbender with this movie, because there are times when I was like, if he wasn't here, this would really like suck way more than it does. And I would not be having a good time. But he is here. And what he can do with his face is more than Bryan Singer did with like $100 million making this movie. It's just like, he's this linchpin of quality at the center of it. Even when everyone else varies, you have this steady force of Michael Fassbender as Eric. That is just, when we talk about like the perfect castings, like he's not going to come up because we also have Ian McKellen and people love Ian. And I love Ian McKellen as that character, but I think that Fassbender is a little bit underrated in terms of just his fit for Magneto. And like, when we talk about like Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. and we talk about, you know, Hugh Jackman and Wolverine, like, even though I love Ian McKellen so desperately, there is something so perfect about Fassbender, Jamie, as Magneto, that I just, he's such a perfect fit. And it sucks that we are not going to get a really like high quality, full on Magneto story post, you know, Days of Future Past to like tell with him. Cause I doubt the MCU is going to cast any of the same people, which is fine. Like, start fresh, pull out the Band-Aid. But he was just so good that he can make the blandest, dumbest, most out of place scenes feel powerful. Mm-hmm. Like that, when that X went in the ground,
yes,
like you should be laughing hysterically, but like, I'm kind of like, hey, hell yeah, man. Tell him who it is. Tell him
that
who it
was
is.
One of the because few moments that like legitimately worked for me. I was like, hell yeah, that does.
Because of him. It's all there in his eyes and his face. And it's like, they sink in, it gets all red and he starts crying. It's like, I'm helpless, because Fassbender is a nuclear weapon of talent. And the worst director can't mess that up.
This is the Magneto is Right episode of Phase Zero. Thank you everybody for joining us today. But yeah, I definitely agree with everything you said, Charlie. At the same time, like, this movie does start to frustrate me in the sense of like, it just becomes a sense of replaying the hits of what already has worked, both like since in the past 20 years of the movies and in just like this little kind of sort of trilogy that we have. Cause I feel like the whole bit with the necklace just feels like a lesser version of the coin scene from First Class. And like, that moment in First Class is edited so brilliantly. It is like so impactful. It's like a cool little way to utilize his powers in this movie, but it doesn't feel remotely in the same kind of impact. And like, for me, the Quicksilver scene is kind of a similar thing too, of like, I like the one in Days of Future Past so much more, because this started to feel like just kind of diminishing returns and doing the same thing again.
Hey, yeah, shout out Ralph Boner though. My man,
it's
Ralph
definitely
Boner.
Fun. It's a fun segment, but I totally agree. Like, it's way better in the last movie, but I still like, it gets me pumped. I'm like, oh yeah, I like that these movies are like, Quicksilver does a thing and it's entertaining. But I agree that's why this movie shouldn't exist. Like that's the whole thing. Like, they should have stopped and they didn't. And they ran out of ideas.
Aaron, what is your visual aid?
It is a 0 out of 10 for Michael Fassbender is not in linen pants. Therefore, the movie is irrelevant. He did not stab anybody in a bar. There were no linen pants. Yikes.
Bless you.
But I gave him nothing to do.
I will say, the F-bomb is very good, like, that he does get in this movie.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I thoroughly enjoyed that, because I completely forgot that even existed in this
That's
movie.
One of the best consistencies of these X-Men movies. You get one F-bomb in a PG-13, and they're 2 for 2 coming into this, because Logan's in First Class, fantastic. Fantastic. Perfect use. If you get one F-word, that is the best way to do it. This is probably second best. It's really good.
I will say, just to keep like the Magneto train going, like, the Auschwitz scene is so powerful. It is so impactful. Like, it does feel so cathartic to the character, but it just feels like in this movie, it feels so tonally out of place. Like, it feels like too good of a scene for like the rest of the movie that's around it.
I heard this somewhere and that they actually filmed there. And so Olivia Munn was like really uncomfortable, like being in that outfit, being like, I don't remember where I heard this, so I hope it's true. But basically being like, yeah, I was like in a Halloween costume walking around there. And that's that'd be awkward and uncomfortable. That's weird.
I had just assumed they filmed somewhere in Vancouver because I was like trying to place it with like other things I've seen on like CW and WB shows. But like that, yeah, if they did film there, like that is even weirder. Like it just kind of, it exemplifies like the weird tone of this movie. Of like we have this super serious kind of grave moment and then we just have Power Rangers Halloween costumes in the same breath.
Can you imagine like the Logan, the Loganified version of this story for just Eric of like this broken man wrestling with like someone in his ear telling him he needs to be more powerful, like this apocalypse figure, and Charles trying to get through to him. And like that's the whole movie is just like take all the other stuff away. And it's just this journey of this guy trying to wrestle with his own demons and his own past. And the fact that really he should just kill everyone because what has anyone ever given him? Nothing but pain and harm and sorrow. And like, he has to eventually still make the right choice. That's a really cool idea of a movie. And I think that was part of the idea going into this. If you notice, there are four story writers going into this and one screenwriter, and the one screenwriter is the worst of the four story writers. So you had all these good ideas and then, hey, Simon Kinberg, what if you took all the chalkboards and then made a script out of them? Because you did a great job last time. So we end up with this story that I think has good ideas in it from different people. Michael Dougherty is a accredited story writer of this. You know, the Godzilla, Michael Dougherty. And it's like, not that that's it, like King of Monsters is the greatest movie ever, but like a fun storyteller. And it's like, then we get Ultra Kinberg at the end of the day.
I will say Kinberg, go ahead.
I was going to say, Kinberg is a really good producer and he should stick to his lane. You know, like much like, I'm just going to say, J.J. Abrams, an amazing producer. Sometimes his writing falls flat. That's just what happens. I also want to say that I Googled it and they did not film there. Either someone lied to me or she was just expressing that it's a weird thing to film in general.
Which I think is understandable. Because I was starting to gaslight myself because like the background of where they were looks like this one sequence in Smallville of like I recognized those buildings when they like shot outside them like 15 years earlier on Smallville. So I was kind of like, if that's not that, then I was going to be kind of surprised. But yeah, I think like keeping the topic going of just the villains and the costumes and everything, rewatching this after now having gone through the Krakoa era of the comics just makes me like even more disappointed in how Apocalypse is presented, both just aesthetically. Like I appreciate them going practical because I feel like there's a version of this where he's just a weird, goofy CG villain. And I'm glad that it's practical, but putting Oscar Isaac through pounds of makeup and characterizing him this way just feels like such a wasted opportunity in every single way.
They saw Thanos, and I think that was the mark they were trying to hit, and they missed. It's
very possible.
They missed a lot, many times. It's not.
I have seen this movie a lot, but it had been a while, and this is the first time I realized like how bad it looks. Like it it's just ugly, and a lot of the CGI is bad. Mystique looks worse. Like all the blue people, it's like they didn't have time to finish it or something. And I think watching them all so close together, this is the first time I realized, I'm like we keep seeing this shot of this explosion from the Quicksilver scene. And I'm like, that just doesn't look very good. And it's weird because the last couple look great.
And there's the criticism about the MCU that I think as everyone tried to copy the MCU extends to others. And this whole like decolorification, this like make everything gray and serious and moody, but not moody at all because it's just like walls and green screens. And it just, you know, you just take away so much personality and especially from the X-Men, like everyone watching X-Men 97 right now, obviously it is animated. So it's a little bit different, but like it's colorful and it pops and it looks cool. And the best X-Men live action movies did, even if you set it in a realistic world, you can make things look colorful and fresh and good. And this just the whole genre of comic book stuff, this grayscale that we like move into in the mid 2010s and like just really kind of encompasses a lot of these movies. It's a real bummer. That hopefully I think we're in the process of changing, because one of the most colorful filmmakers of this whole era is now running one of the two studios. So hopefully colors are coming back, but it's sad to look at.
I think it's both color and it's also just like the execution of like certain aesthetics. Cause like I wrote notes during the third act and like, I agree with Jamie on the makeup. Like I specifically wrote that like Beast looks objectively worse than he did in First Class in particular, which is kind of disappointing. But then let's like, you get to the
beard in this one.
Like you get to the third act fight and just like both the execution of certain people's powers, like it, the way that they filmed it was so baffling. There's one shot of Storm that looks like you almost like took it from a completely different movie. Like the color grading is completely different. You can so tell that she's standing on a backdrop. Like there are so many moments with the fight where it's like, it's not executed in the way that it should be. And it's just kind of, it exemplifies what you were saying of just kind of where we were at aesthetically at that point in time. But yeah, so kind of jumping back, going back before the third act, I have to point out two lines of dialogue that kind of drove me crazy. The first one is the whole Empire Strikes Back scene.
Oh, man.
At the time, I remember being like, this is clever. They've earned this. Whatever. Now I'm just kind of like, it sucks the air out of the room for me. It feels like you're drawing too much attention to the way that these movies were initially perceived. And then to also have like that kind of outlook and have that kind of meta-ness in a movie that is also kind of missing the mark. It's just like, it takes me out of it.
It's very much the worst of the three.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, they knew it was going to be the worst one. So they were like covering their ass, but like, obviously Return of the Jedi is a much better movie than this movie. Like I know that in 1983, people walked out of that being like, oh, I'm a little disappointed, but it wasn't like this. Although if there was Twitter in 1983, when Return of the Jedi came out, my God, I wouldn't, I'm so glad that didn't exist. But like, yeah, that moment it's like, oh yeah, it'd be funnier if this wasn't, like if this was better, but also like whenever she says it, the third is the worst. I'm like, get ready for the fourth one. Cause you're about to top yourself.
And like that line for me. And then the line that kills the whole scene with Logan later on in the movie is Scott being like, I hope that's the last we've ever seen of that guy. Like as sweet as the rest of the moment is, that just like kills it for me. It just completely like, I don't know. I get being meta, but there's a difference between being meta and just kind of like delivering a bad joke. So I don't know. Those just take me out of it.
Neither one of those were good jokes.
I also think it's like when the rest of the movie is just so dark and just so tonally inconsistent, then to have these little moments trying to make a joke, it just feels like it lands even flatter.
Like had Days of Future Past been the third movie and you make that joke in Days of Future Past and it's this like undeniably great movie, it's a really funny joke. But like, there's no way you made this and we're like, this is an undeniably great movie. There's no way.
No.
That you're making this and believe that, even if it's your own work. I can't, no one's that, maybe Brian Singh was that delusional. I don't know.
Who knows? And then kind of really going back, going back to the kind of the passage of time or lack thereof, the line talking about how when Havoc dies and it's like, oh, he was supposed to be the one who was going to do something with his life and Scott wasn't going to be that one. And I'm like, isn't this man in his like mid 30s at this point, like by the time we get to the events of this movie? And also like, didn't he kind of help like with the Cuban Missile Crisis to an extent? Like it is just so baffling to me that like they treat him like he's this like older high school, college age, older brother. And it's like, he has been around in this franchise for two decades at this point. Like that's just nuts to me.
Yeah.
Oh, you said Cuban Missile Crisis. Can I just say that Apocalypse, while dumb and mostly wrong, they were all getting mad when he was doing the nuke thing. It's like, he made all the nukes go away. I think that's pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe hear him out because the weapons are gone. That's nice. He should be gone too. But hey, he did make the nukes go away. And thumbs up to Apocalypse for that one.
This the Always Sunny bit where the bird gets stuck in the wall and then you put a cat in the wall.
Yeah.
That's what we just did.
The alternative wasn't better, but then when they kill him, it's like, hey,
Now the nukes all gone.
Maybe I missed it. Where were they fighting when the big fight happens? Do we know where they were and why there were no people?
I know.
Because there's just buildings and dirt.
I cannot remember off the top of my head.
Are they not back in Egypt?
I wanted to say Egypt, but I didn't want to be incorrect. But
that's why I said maybe I missed it. I just
okay. Yeah, the comments are saying Cairo. So okay.
They didn't really make that clear.
It is so emblematic of this movie that like we all legitimately did not know the answer there. But yeah, I just jumping back around in my notes. Another thing that kind of bothers me. So the ending of Days of Future Past for Logan, of him getting fished out of the water by Stryker, and then it's like, oh, it was actually Mystique all along. So none of that mattered. That was absolutely just a pointless thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, because he did end up with Stryker. So it's like they forgot that they put those eyeballs in there. Because it would make sense. Because again, it's a different timeline. He can go with Stryker sooner. So like, was there a trade-off? Was Mystique like, I pretended to be Stryker, but now here you go, Stryker. Like, it's just, it's bizarre.
And then she wanted to get him back, like, the whole time. Yeah. But like, what's most annoying is it's the same filmmakers.
Yeah.
It's not like Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, where you're like, we got to undo it because we didn't like it. It's the same people making these decisions. They're changing their own minds.
Yeah.
Simon Kinberg watched Thriller one time when they was making Days of Future Past and forgot. And then woke up the next day and was like, oh, yeah, I did that. My bad. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it fits into the bone claws sort of thing where they're like, you are not starting this with him off the board and us having to explain what was going on. Just forget about it and move on.
Yeah.
Along the same lines of where they were fighting, what were they building? Do we know that answer? What Magneto was building something. What was it? Because I don't know. It just seemed like a tower.
Yeah.
Just a tall thing.
Apocalypse.
Now that you mentioned that. But see, he built the pyramid. He built the pyramid.
He was like, doing it for a long time.
Yeah,
a long time. And I feel like Apocalypse should be like, cool, building's there, done.
Yeah, yeah. I also, this movie, like the third act in particular, feels like the antithesis of how we get to the explanation for Nick Fury's eye of like, Charles being bald is such an innocuous thing of like, oh, that probably just happened at some point in his life, is that he went bald. And instead, like, we bent over backwards and introduced this immortal conflict for him to be put in to justify why he lost his hair in these movies. Like, it's just nuts.
I think that's
I would
so
love
funny.
A running joke of like, he's just kind of thinning his hair throughout and he makes comments about it. And then like Hank's like, no, man, like, dude, it looks great. Like, it's fine. And then he sees Wolverine one time. He's like, dude, you should shave that. It looks bad. And then it's just a joke. But no, we have an origin story for baldness.
It's so nuts. And then skipping all the way ahead to the very end of the movie, I am still mad to this day at how good the finale costumes are. Those, like, across the board, every single costume that they have at the very, very end of the movie when Mystique is talking to them and saying, like, you are X-Men now. If they had worn those costumes in future movies, I would have been elated. And then instead, we immediately traded them up for costumes that did not hit the mark at all.
I forgot to include that in the recap, but I do like that moment. I like them all getting trained and being in the danger room and stuff.
And Mystique being in charge is so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And we just throw it in the trash.
I mean, listen, people, this is why I always preach like, hey, man, if you go back and think about things from previous eras, you take a different. You think that the freaking cliffhanger at the end of Madame Web is like, what the heck? Why did this happen? The end of this movie? When we got to that part, I was like, bruh.
Madam Web just continued the legacy.
Yeah.
The year of Madam Web.
Someone was in the comments. Sorry, Jenny, go ahead. I'm sorry, not Jenna. Jamie.
Oh, I was just going to say there's one line that I really need to bring up that really is so funny to me, which is, you know, at one point in the movie, Quicksilver tells Mystique that Magneto's his father. And then at the end of the movie, Storm comes up to Quicksilver and she's like, Mystique told me that he's your dad. And I was like, Mystique? What kind of weird, what a gossip queen. You can't be telling everybody that. That's like the serious secretive business. And you're gossiping to like this girl you just met. I think that's really funny. That Storm's like, oh yeah, Mystique told me about your dad. What? I'm like, that is some high school level gossip business.
And
right,
like,
there.
When?
And
when could that have happened at that point?
I just think
when did she and the girl on the other team like have a moment? Like they're punching. Like, hey man, by the way, did you know about the dad? Did you know?
I just feel like if I was Quicksilver in that moment, I've been like, excuse me, she did what? That's crazy.
Thank you for bringing it up, because yeah, that whole like subplot, I like it on paper, but it's just like it's so much of like sitcom miscommunication, and then just other people learning it from other people. It's just wild,
And it's missing a very important piece. Let's be
yes,
honest.
Obviously, yeah. And then we have to get to the post credit scene, which Jamie did not mention in her recap.
They forgot to watch it.
I got saw the notes. I was like, oh shit, I bet there was. Oh, I'm sorry, I cursed. There probably was one of those in this movie. And I was like, oh, well, that's over. And I turned it off, forgetting that I had to wait for something to happen.
Luckily on Disney Plus, it does the thing of like, do you want to skip the credits and go to that scene? So, because I had completely,
I didn't even let it get to that part. Like the credit, I saw Brian Singer. Like, I was like,
I'm done.
Cool.
Done. Yeah, because it's they tease Essex Corporation. So it is one of the many Mr. Sinister teases that did not go anywhere in this franchise.
That John Hamm's never going to get to play.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you were following this franchise at all, you were definitely aware of the rumors and the hopes that John Hamm would play Mr. Sinister. And we did not end up living in that reality. Maybe we will in the MCU one day.
That would have been
I love good. Charlie as Dipper Pines going, this is worthless, and throwing it into the fire. We're done with that.
Yep. Oh, all right. Well, does anyone else have any other notes to add?
Nope. No, Jamie mentioned a good line, and the one line I wrote down that I was thinking about the whole movie for no reason at all. When he says, I think that was my favorite tree. When he Cyclops slices the tree in half with his eyes, and it's just Charles talking for minutes about like, oh, I used to swing from that tree and my dad planted it and it was my favorite. And then he's like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like, no, I'm proud of you. And it's like, all right. That was a weird way to say it, but you're supposed to be smart, man. You're talking nonsense. You're not really, you don't seem that smart right now.
That statement could just exemplify these latter Fox movies, I feel like.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. We're going to take another quick 1 minute break. When we come back, we are going to review these movies on a 10 score. So stay tuned. Back to Phase Zero. We are in the third act of our X-Men Apocalypse review and recap. It is now time to give a review score out of 10. I'm very, very curious what the number is going to be for all of us here. I have the calculator ready to go to count our average. So, Aaron, you're at the top of the board. Have at it.
Man, I struggled because I don't keep track of what we do. I don't remember what I do from day to day. I don't remember. I think this is probably like a 5. Like, honestly, just because I don't feel anything, I don't really, like, at least I laughed in Madam Web. At least some of the earlier goofiness of Last Stand is, like, there and redeemed by a better movie later. And even, is that higher than we did Origins? I don't know. At least that's, like, offensive. I think that in the true Ben Yahtzee Croshaw, like, the big bland is somehow, in some ways worse, where you don't think about things, you just let it wash over you. Every time I see one of those things on Twitter when they talk about Oscar Isaac's been in all these different franchises, different characters, and I'm just like, that's right, he was Apocalypse, dang. And that gets you a 5.
So I did go back and check. The Origins average score was 4.2, so just keep that in mind as we're giving our scores. Jamie, what's your score?
I'm very generous with this one on Letterboxd. I gave it a 3.5 because when I look at the ones that are a 3, I just have more visceral feelings. And this one, I just enjoy watching it. But a 7 is way too high. So I'm going to bump it down and I'm going to say 6.2.
Okay. Charlie, what about you?
I am trying to remember what I gave Origins, because I think this is better than Origins. But at the same time, Aaron made a really good point, and something that I feel a lot with this is, there's an apathy to it. Like, it's X-Men apathy, I think is the name of this. Because it's just, there are good things and it's not a disaster, but I don't care. And that almost makes it worse. I'm going to give it 4 out of 10. And 3 of those are specifically for Michael Fassbender. He gets 3 stars to himself and the rest of the movie can have 1. It's frustrating to watch the ending. It's frustrating to watch a movie in which Jennifer Lawrence gets nothing to do, and she's like one of the greatest of like our generation, and she's just like amounts to nothing. To see Ben Hardy done like that, an actor I really like, it just, you know, those cool wings just taken away. Everything they did was just so frustrating. So I think four is where I'm gonna sit.
I agree with Aaron. I was exactly at a five, like going into this. And I do think I'm going to stick with a five because it is just, it's so middle of the road. Like there is a lot that I actively dislike, but it's not even a fun dislike. I can't even really hate watch this movie. It just becomes like a chore in and of itself, which is kind of the worst thing that you can be, especially in this space. So yeah, I think I'm definitely at a five with that. So I totally screwed up my calculator, but we will get the average score and we will post that on social media.
Ooh, I can't wait.
I mean, it's right about a five. We had two fives, yeah, and like a 6 point and a four. It's right about five.
Let me insert it right there. While we're plugging various things, I will start getting the numbers ready. So Charlie, you're on the big board. What do you want to leave the listeners with today?
Hey, go watch Bluey. Bluey's better than X-Men Apocalypse. And The Sign is one of the best TV episodes of the entire year. It's perfect and wonderful. And I'm not paid by Bluey. I'm a dad, so I love Bluey. That's all I got. That's my work life has been Fallout and Bluey leading to this past like week and a half. And now I feel like it's this just area of open space that I get to figure out what to do next. Cause it's all been that stuff. So go watch Bluey. Have a good cry over Bluey's house and the wedding and all kinds of good stuff.
Very nice. So I did tabulate. So we're at a 5.05. That is our average phase zero ranking for X-Men Apocalypse. That feels very reasonable. That feels right. But yeah, Aaron, what do you want to leave the listeners with today?
I'm going to leave you the big plug, Jenna, as feel like you're going to do.
Yeah.
But I just want to thank everybody for coming through. We are so close to the end. If you are like me, and this has been a little bit of a journey, the end is in sight. We hear it. Deadpool Wolverine is awesome. Thank you to Mr. Kerr in the comments being like, he was building a better future, which made me laugh. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It takes a lot to get through these for me. You can tell. Yeah. So I appreciate my co-host. Go read my co-host's brilliant thoughts about all the CinemaCon stuff over on comicbook.com. That's what I got for you.
I love it. Jamie?
Aaron said journey, but Aaron meant chore. Aaron was just saying it.
It's about to be a chore for y'all.
Yeah.
Oh. Follow me on Letterboxd at Jamie Jurak. I logged my 200th movie of 2024 yesterday, so there's lots of content to read and see over there. And, you know, stop having your phone out during the movies when you're in the movie theater.
Preach. I'm at Hey It's Jenna Lynn on social media. Go read some comics. If you were disaffected by this movie and want better Apocalypse storytelling, obviously there is the Age of Apocalypse storyline, but go read Excalibur from the Krakoa era because it is just a delight with regards to Apocalypse. Don't forget to follow the show at Phase Zero CB. As Aaron mentioned, we posted a major spotlight interview over the weekend. Aaron and I got to talk to Alekwa Cox about all things Echo, and it was a delightful episode. So you can check that out now on YouTube and on your podcast platforms of choice. We will be back on Wednesday with another normal episode. BD will hopefully be joining us for that, and we'll break down everything at CinemaCon and whatever other Marvel news is in store for this week. So play the show for your mom, play the show for your dog, and we will see you on Wednesday.